You're listening to The Dream Dealer's Daughter, written and read to you by Emily McCumber. Support the show by subscribing on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, and if you can, please rate and review the show as well. This really helps me out. Thanks. This is Chapter 14, The Ferris Wheel. Sound surrounds Nargis. She just can't hear any of it. The ground vibrates upon each of her steps, meaning this dream is designed to interact with and echo the presence of its visitors. But the tall grass that reaches her knees makes no sound as it brushes her pant legs. Birds fly overhead, quiet as ever, and the forest line she spies through a dense fog fights a strong wind that's silent to her ears. Either the person who crafted this dream isn't dependent upon sound to navigate life, or they expect most visitors to fill in what's lacking. Nargis has been walking for, she checks her variance watch, 10 minutes. Letty said to let the card be her guide. Well, she's done exactly that and followed the card through the all time, but so far, there is no sign of Dula. She enters the forest and stares at the sky in search of the moon. It isn't visible through the treetops. The further she ventures within, the denser the fog grows, and soon it steals her sight, forcing her to rely on her mental senses. Isaac asked her once how she knew people were near before she received Lilia. She explained it's like some part of her is triggered by approaching energy, and although the airs of two people differ drastically, they are enough the same at their core for Nargis to determine the presences she has sensed are, in fact, people. The same applies to thoughts, emotions, and the memories of things. She can sense when they are near and knows what they are. And the presences disguised in the fog, she recognizes to be scopes, extensions of the mind lurking somewhere within this dream. She stills her air and emotions, withholds herself from the scope's surveil. Life, through the mental senses, is anything but quiet. It's full of information from sources the body often ignore. But this dream's land has nothing to say. She has only a minuscule sense of touch to interpret her surroundings. When the density of the ground beneath the soles of her shoes alters from that of damp soil to gravel, her physical senses return. She parts through the coverage of trees, the fog clears, and she steps into an abundance of light, sound, and energy. All around her is a carnival. There are stalls with games and prizes, food carts and trucks, but no people. Just a lone mind sitting in the passenger car of a Ferris wheel. Nargis pauses before the ramp leading to the "You must be this tall to ride" sign. The mind waiting for her presents as a faceless persona, their gender unidentifiable from neither their air nor their physical attributes. They have stylish short hair that's parted on one side and wear a set of clear glasses, even though they appear to have no eyes. She's always heard that Dula is as elusive as the dreamers of time, and she took this lightly as everyone is mysterious. Some minded just do a better job of hiding their secrets. Standing before Dula now, she has a new appreciation for their elusive reputation. They may present in the form of a body, but nothing about them is interpretable. Their air contains no emotion, no thoughts, and usually, when a mind's air is defensed, Nargis looks next to body language, but their persona offers none. Amos, a dreamer who sells romance on Dream Street, claims to have encountered Dula. Says to all of his customers that one could be in the same dream as Dula, and the only clue of their presence would be the sight of their faceless persona, followed by an utter lack of information. A void where something should be. That the trick to being aware of them is focusing on this unmistakably unique sense of silence, as it's in this quiet where their true air lurks. Nargis pulls the emptiness Dula emits and finds one detail. The mark of Pertis. Soulmate is the prior word for Perti. The concept is not all that close in relation, but the presence before her reeks of the air of soulmates who have bridged their minds, forming a more unified existence. It's rare for Pertis to present as one presence when outside of their bodies. In some variances, it's even looked down upon. As she takes in Dula's air, Nargis wonders, when alone, do these Pertis operate singularly as individuals, And is this merged presence another tactic at remaining ambiguous? But if this is true and two minds form the presence known as Dula, why is this fact not common knowledge throughout the all-time? A voice parts the silence. You think highly of yourself. Excuse me? You assume we present only like this to trick you, when in fact, our presence is natural. Can't blame you, really. Most assume we aren't a we at all, but a singular mind that identifies with no gender. Dula pats the open bench beside them. Join us, please. Nargis walks the short ramp leading to the cart, and eyes the bench across from Dula. Too many of the chairs and dreams are traps, but standing means closer proximity to Dula, which isn't ideal. She opts for leaning against the wall of the cart. Crossing her arms, she says, "Just because I'm here doesn't mean I've accepted. First, I need to know why you can't kill Eugene on your own. Answer my questions and maybe I'll consider." We've heard stories about you. Stories claiming that regardless of the persona you wear, you have never lived in a body. If this is true, you're likely the only mind in time to exist as you do. You are rare, and rare is valuable. Why am I here? Your impatience makes you weak. Like accents and language, thoughts have distinct qualities in how they come across. And these two minds that make up Dula, their thoughts have the subtlest difference in delivery. The more thoughts they send, the clearer the distinction becomes. It's no secret that obtaining a body or some semblance of permanence is what motivates you, but Largo will never embody you properly. And what, you will? You just happen to have an extra body lying around that I can use. We can provide you a body in any time of your choice, and are prepared to do this ethically. I just have to murder someone before I can get that ethically acquired body. Is that the deal? Eugene doesn't have to die. Letty says a lot of things. A lot of things that are wrong. We don't want Eugene dead. Not while he has what we want. Nargis searches them again, but still, there's nothing for her to analyze. And you need me somehow in order to get what you want. On top of offering you a body, we offer you truth. When it comes to your failed embodiments, compatibility isn't your only problem. Largo anchored you to your brother, Eugene, therefore preventing you from permanently entering a physical variance. Nargis barely contains her laughter, but it'd be unwise to let Dula feel any of her emotions. Catch one, and they could know just that much more about the structure of her existence, and use it against her later on. She says, "That isn't possible for me. A mind needs to have a past to be anchored, and as I'm sure you're already aware, I have no past lives." We are determined to carry out the Dreamers of Time's plans. To do this, we need the other half of Ario's memories, of which Eugene currently has hidden beyond your anchor in his mind. That name, Ario, it holds so much weight, so much importance for her and Isaac. That's fascinating, really it is. Even if I've somehow been anchored, when I don't have the necessary past for that to be possible. If you are as powerful and as ruthless as others say, you shouldn't need my help getting what you want from Eugene. Then you clearly don't know how anchors work. Has Nargis made an anchor? No. Has she seen one crafted? Also no. Has she heard of the concept? Yes. When she doesn't reply, they continue. Only the mind that has been anchored can unanchor itself. Something has always prevented you from embodying into a variance, yes? And every year, Largo has a new excuse for you, or he blames it on the fact that you have no past lives and therefore no genetic code for which to base your compatibility. Until you unanchor yourself, it doesn't matter whether you have a genetic code or not. You won't be able to embody any secondhand form. You need us, and we need you. Let's imagine that, sure, I'm anchored, and I have a past out there. You've just told me where it is, so no, I don't need your help. You can't get to your anchor without us. We're the only minds that can get through the first set of defenses around Eugene's mind. Well, that's convenient. Dula leans in. Their elusive air brushing Nargis's awareness. Rushing through her is a stark discomfort. Dula's presence is like the forest that led to the carnival, shrouded in mystery and dangerous unknowns. And Nargis has just made a mistake. We will not be manipulated. Our offer of providing you a body, of paying you at all for assisting in the retrieval of what we are owed, is not out of kindness. We'd prefer not to force you. You think you are immune to threats, but you have your weaknesses like everyone else. We can arrange to have all memory of you erased from every mind you've ever dreamt for. And of course, it'd be such a shame if anything were to happen to Lionel, the Aeris clan, or Isaac. The fog from earlier is creeping in, getting denser. Her air is filling with tension and even fear. Her mind struggles to piece together the logistics of their claim. It's too much. The idea that she could be anchored and Largo is responsible. Not possible. It can't be. But these doubts are obliterated when Dula's threat computes into meaning. They say, there's no getting around the fact that we need each other. But unlike Largo, we will value and respect you. Unlike Largo, we always keep our promises. Once you undo the anchor in Eugene's mind and retrieve our rightful information, we'll help you obtain a body in whatever time you want. Because Nargis, once you unanchor yourself, you'll obtain your past lives, in which you must have had a body, and you'll finally have the material necessary for genetic code that we can then use to find you a compatible form for your present life. We have the means and the connections, and you have the key to the information we need. When you gather the courage to do the only thing that will get you what you want, what you deserve, follow the red card that led you here, and it will deliver you to Anmay's Dream Shop, where a new heir and persona will be waiting for you. You aren't the only minds interested in what's inside Eugene's mind. Why are Ario's memories so valuable? Why do you think they belong to you? But the Ferris wheel lurches into action, and the fog has engulfed the moment. Dula is gone. When the Ferris wheel clatters to a stop, the carnival dissolves, taking its place at the subway station. A blast of wind across her face. Her train has arrived. Only, she has nowhere to go but within. You've just listened to The Dream Dealer's Daughter, written and read to you by Emily McCumber. If you listen to podcasts on the regular, you know just how important reviews and ratings are. It would be awesome, fantastic, if you could subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It helps tell the algorithm, hey, this show is important. Maybe we should push it out to more listeners. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you in the next chapter. The Dream Dealer's Daughter, copyright 2022, Emily McCumber.